Okay. Well, we're going to finish this thing we started last week on was America founded by Antichrist? And last week, you know, I showed the purpose of this guy, Christian J. Pinto's documentary, The Secret Faith of the Founding Fathers, is to prove that Thomas Paine, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and others were actually Christ-hating infidels who were not only following Antichrist's philosophies and ideas of the Enlightenment movement in Europe at that time, but they were also deliberately trying to propagate the heresy of universalism, which, of course, is taught in secret societies like the Freemasonry, okay, and the Illuminati. And as you said last week, regarding the purpose of that documentary, Mr. Pinto himself said, quote, "This newest work really brings together so much of the research we've been unfolding that shows further how the United States was planned from the beginning to help launch a global society, the New World Order, by establishing the doctrine of religious freedom. Most Christians in our country don't realize that the concept of religious freedom is not biblical. Nowhere in the Bible does God say that men have the right to worship whatever God they please. Religious freedom helped unite America against England and is today being used by the Vatican to join all the world religions into a united one world order. The destruction of the gospel. The destruction of the gospel was a desire of men like Thomas Jefferson, along with John Adams and Thomas Paine. By biblical definition, they were antichrists. Others like Washington and Franklin, while less hostile towards Christianity, sought to subvert the gospel through universalism." Of course, that was from an article we read last week and gave the link. And as I said last week, Mr. Pinto tries to deliberately deceive the viewer of this documentary through false insinuations which are attached to historical facts. And the first false insinuation he indulges in is that the five men he exposes in that video were the, as in the only, the founding fathers of America. Well, he knows very well that those five men were only some of the founders of America. He knows very well that there were other founders who were just as important as these five men. But he's purposely spinning historical facts through false insinuations in order to lead the viewer to a wrong conclusion. The second false insinuation he indulges in is that the rest of America's original leaders secretly agreed with Thomas Paine's anti-Christian views. And we exposed both of those insinuations last week as deliberate lies. The truth is very clear, and it's easily validated by anyone who cares to take the time to search it out with the pertinent historical documents. It's an undeniable historical fact that there were 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, and they're all considered founding fathers. It's also an historical fact that most of the leaders of America, as well as its citizens at that time, rejected Thomas Paine's attack on Christianity. Therefore, those who claim or insinuate otherwise are liars and deceivers. Now, one of the reasons we've lost so many of our religious freedoms in this country is because American Christians have been too busy making money and seeking the good life to concern themselves with, let alone understand and fight against, the liberal educational establishment that took control of our public schools over 75 years ago and has been working nonstop ever since then to eliminate America's Christian heritage from all public education. The indifference of most Americans, including American Christians, most of them, to what has been happening over these last 500 years has allowed these scumbags and perverts to brainwash two whole generations of children with their humanistic, socialistic philosophy. And we now have two generations of Americans, along with millions of illegal immigrants who don't even speak English, who have no idea whatsoever that America was founded as a Christian nation by Christian people. And of course, Mr. Pinto is helping the cause of all these humanist God-haters and socialists, perverts, by producing a film that declares the same exact message that they've been spreading for centuries, okay? They've been spreading in our culture, universities, public schools, okay? So he's encouraging, he's empowering, he's producing something that will give credence and validate that message that these people have been spreading for many years. And I say, well, having these kinds of liars and sexual perverts as fellow travelers, would make me a little bit uncomfortable. Just a wee bit. But apparently Mr. Pinto has no problem walking in the company of those kinds of people. And I say, well, great job, Mr. Pinto. Yeah, thanks for helping the enemies of Christianity destroy our nation, you stupid fool. Well, we ended last week's message with the Treaty of Tripoli. The Treaty of Tripoli. And as I said, Mr. Pinto isn't the first person to use that treaty as, quote, proof that America was founded as a secular state. At one time or another, all progressives and socialists and communists have tried to use that treaty as proof that America was not founded as a Christian nation. In the clip that I played last week, the last clip, if you remember, he said the Treaty of Tripoli is the clearest declaration that the original founders of the United States of America did not believe they were setting forth a Christian nation. He also has said if you read the entire treaty, you'll see that there was no reason for them, meaning the original Senate, the original Congress, First Congress, to come right out and say the government of the United States of America is not in any way founded upon the Christian religion, if they didn't mean it. And then he went on to say the following. He said, now, why was that treaty unanimously agreed to? The question is, where are those who leaped to their feet and lifted up a shout against this treaty once they heard it? You would think that there would be at least one Christian who would jump up and say something. Of course, then the film commentator comes on and says, quote, the absence of Christians in early American government would explain why no one objected to Article 11 of the Treaty of Tripoli. Now, I already explained last week why the Treaty of Tripoli was unanimously ratified. The original treaty was drafted in Libya, not in the United States, and it was drafted in Arabic, not English. Because of the urgency of the situation, American leaders had to pass the treaty as it was. They could not afford to redraft a new treaty, then send it back to Tripoli, which was the name of Libya at that time, by ship, then wait for it to be signed by the Arabs and have it sent back to America by ship. That would take over a year. A signed treaty was imperative right then to stop the carnage that was taking place at that very moment as a result of Islamic pirates attacking and capturing American merchant ships in the Mediterranean Sea. And those pirates would take the captain and the crew of those ships, and they would sell them as slaves in Africa. Now, the Muslims had America over a barrel, and they were basically dictating the terms of the treaty. And we also paid tribute, like protection money, with that treaty, which all the nations were doing at that time. Everybody in Europe was paying the Arabs protection money, you know. And along with that treaty, we paid them, I don't forget what it was, $1 million or something in gold for protection money. And they were dictating the terms. And it was drawn up in Arabic in their country, but it was translated by an anti-Christian diplomat named Joel Barlow. And he was the U.S. Consul General of Algiers and the person in charge of the treaty negotiations under the authority of President George Washington. Now, Mr. Barlow had once served under Washington as a chaplain. Imagine that. A chaplain in the Revolutionary Army. He became good friends with Thomas Paine and Jefferson, and he started reading this Enlightenment literature coming out of Europe. And sometime later, he abandoned Christianity for rationalism and became an advocate of secular government. So he, along with associate Captain Richard O'Brien and others, they translated and modified the original Arabic version of the treaty by inserting Article 11, and they forwarded and modified that version by ship to the legislatures in America for approval, and it was unanimously signed in 1797, all right? Now, like I said also, 8 years later, once America had established a powerful navy, and they had beaten the pirates in the famous sea battle, and they were bombarding Tripoli from the ocean, then the Arabs gave up. You know, they surrendered, and we negotiated a brand new treaty in English on our own terms. That was in 1805 and 1806, the end of 1805, the beginning of 1806. And when the circumstances were different, and we were in charge of drafting the various points of that treaty, the phrase about America not being a Christian nation in any respect was removed. So if those early leaders who signed that original one really believed America was not a Christian nation, as Pinto asserts, they would not have bothered removing that phrase from Article 11 when they drafted a new treaty. And maybe recall in the audio clip I played last week, Mr. Pinto quoted an historian named Moncure D. Conway as saying, quote, Article 11 was drafted by none other than George Washington. Then he quotes Mr. Conway as saying the following. Mr. Conway says, quote, the first in his book, He writes a book called Address and Reprints by Moncure D. Conway. He said, the first time Washington came in treaty with a non-Christian people, Tripoli, he sent to the Senate a treaty which opened with the following. The government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded upon the Christian religion. There is a statement from the great Washington, Conway says. Okay? I just want to touch on this again this week because that whole presentation is full of historical errors, which I didn't mention last week. First of all, George Washington did not draft Article 11 of the treaty. He didn't even see it until it got back to America. Moreover, that treaty did not open with, Conway says, he sent to the Senate a treaty which opened with the following. That didn't open with the following. It opened with another phrase. Article 11, as the name implies, was the 11th article of that treaty. It was not the opening sentence. You see, Mr. Conway wanted his readers to believe that Washington, George Washington, and the U.S. Senate had openly declared that America was not founded as a Christian nation because he, like Joe Barlow was an anti-Christian apostate. And so was Moncure D. Conway. They wanted to promote secular government. Okay, they didn't like the idea of the United States being founded by Christian principles and by Christian men. Now, to further establish Pinto's distorted view of early America, he then quotes from a book, which in turn quotes an Episcopal pastor from that era, who supposedly spent years studying the lives of the founders and came to the conclusion that they were nearly all infidels. And the name of that book is called Six Historic Americans, and the author of the book is John E. Remsburg. And the six Americans in that book were Paine, Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, Lincoln, and Grant. And Mr. Remsburg supposedly quotes the words of Reverend Bird Wilson as saying this. He said, quote, the founders of our nation were nearly all infidels. When the war was over, the Constitution was framed and God was neglected. He was not merely forgotten. He was absolutely voted out of the Constitution. The proceedings as published by Charles Thompson, the secretary, show that the question was gravely debated whether God should be in the Constitution or not. And after a solemn debate, he was deliberately voted out of it. Those who have been called to administer the government have not been men making any public profession of Christianity. That's from John E. Remsburg's book, Six Historic Americans. He's quoting a minister called Reverend Bird Wilson. Well, now, who is John Remsburg? He was another anti-Christian historian like Moncure D. Conway. He was a lifelong member of the American Secular Union, and his claim to fame was a book he wrote, which is still in print, in which he supposedly proves that the story of Jesus as presented in the New Testament is a myth. And the name of that book is The Christ. Remsburg said he examined the New Testament and also the writings of well-known pagan authors from the time of Jesus, and his conclusion was that there's no evidence for the miracles of Jesus or his birth or crucifixion or resurrection. So this unbeliever is quoting a pastor, and the pastor supposedly said all the founders were infidels. My question is, why is Mr. Pinto keep quoting the views of so many anti-Christian, secular, or apostate historians regarding this Treaty of Tripoli, while totally ignoring the views of Christian historians? Why has he refused to explain the historic events surrounding the treaty? Well, it's because secular and apostate historians support his false view of American history. Also, by using these kinds of historians, he can misrepresent that history and convince people that, number one, George Washington wasn't trying to establish a Christian nation because he himself was the author of Article 11 of the treaty. And two, since nobody in the Senate opposed that treaty, when it was read out loud, it's obvious they didn't think they were setting up a Christian nation either. Well, what about Reverend Wilson's statements, as quoted in Remsburg's book? Well, it seems that Mr. Pinto is either ignorant of the historical facts or else he's deliberately lying again, because those statements that are being attributed to this Episcopalian pastor, Bird Wilson, actually come from a Reformed Presbyterian minister named James R. Wilson. Now, confusing Bird Wilson with James Wilson is a result of misreading Mr. Remsburg's book. If you read Six Historic Americans very carefully, which Mr. Pinto obviously hasn't, you'll see that James Wilson and Bird Wilson are two different people. And the confusion comes from the fact that Mr. Remsburg didn't make this distinction clear enough throughout the book. And added to further confusion is the fact that Remsburg misspells Wilson's last name with only one L several times. And even more confusion has resulted from the fact that both Bird Wilson and James Wilson lived in Albany, New York, at the same time. They're both pastors, they both lived in Albany, and they're both around that time. Now, this guy, James Wilson, was a prominent member of the Reformed Presbyterian Church, which viewed the U.S. Constitution as an infidel document because of its lack of supplication to God, because of its absence of religious test for office, and because of its absence of an explicit mention of a covenant between America and God. And that view was articulated by a sermon by this Pastor Wilson called, it's a very long one, called Prince Messiah's Claims to Dominion Over All Governments and the Disregard of His Authority by the United States in the Federal Constitution. And I have a link where you can actually read this sermon. And because of the way this Pastor Wilson, James Wilson, criticized the Constitution and the President in that sermon, he was not only denounced by his peers, he was burned in effigy on the streets. See, what happens is this Reverend Wilson, James Wilson, is actually a forerunner of today's dominionists, the ones who are trying to create a Christian theocracy in America. And in fact, many of his arguments against the U.S. Constitution are actually fleshed out in an e-book written by Gary North, if you know that guy's name. He's one of today's more famous dominionists. He used the same arguments of this Reverend Wilson in his attempt to establish a Christian theocracy. So there was a confusion there. So this whole thing about this pastor that Pinto uses as saying all this stuff, it wasn't even true, it was another guy. But Pinto's use of anti-Christian historians, along with the rantings of this fanatical dominionist preacher, has enabled him to spin the whole story of the Treaty of Tripoli, so that the person who views that film is going to walk away from it convinced that not only did George Washington, but the entire government of early America was filled with gospel-hating antichrists. And that this is Pinto's objective is not only my claim, it's revealed when the film's commentator says, quote, "The absence of Christians in early American government would explain why no one objected to Article 11 of the Treaty of Tripoli," okay? He's trying to manipulate the viewer to bring him to the conclusion that not only Washington, but everybody at that time were a bunch of antichrists. There were no Christians. The whole early American government was a bunch of infidels. Now, it's true, there were men in early America who thought a secular government would be best for the nation. There's no doubt about that. There were even a few people like Thomas Paine and Ethan Allen that actually hated Christians and Christianity. But these kind of people were not as significant as Mr. Pinto would have us believe. They were firebrands of the Revolution, but they were not intellectual architects of the Constitution. Okay, Mr. Paine, for instance, didn't even arrive in this country until 1774, and he only stayed a short time. As for the other leaders of that period, George Washington, Samuel Adams, James Madison, John Witherspoon, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, John Adams, Patrick Henry, and others, even Thomas Jefferson, their personal correspondence, their biographies, and their public statements are filled with quotations showing that these thinkers had political philosophies deeply influenced by Christianity. They had political philosophies that were deeply influenced by Christianity, by the principles of Christianity. And as I said last week, the phrase founding fathers is a proper noun which refers to a specific group of men, the 55 delegates of the Constitutional Convention. Now, of course, there are other important players not in attendance at that time and who also took part in the Declaration and the Constitution, whose thinking also influenced and shaped our nation. But those 55 men compromised the core of the founding fathers of America. And for those who are genuinely interested in knowing the truth about what kind of light, whether it was religious or humanistic and secular, the kind of light that guided the vast majority of these men, their denominational affiliations are a matter of public record. For instance, among the delegates of the Constitutional Convention, there were 28 Episcopalians, 8 Presbyterians, 7 Congregationalists, 2 Lutherans, 2 Dutch Reformed, 2 Methodists, and 2 Roman Catholics. There was one unknown, and there was 3 deists, Williamson, Wilson, and Franklin. And of course, another little historical fact you'll never hear Mr. Pinto relating is at this point, church membership entailed a sworn public confession of biblical faith. You had to publicly confess you're a Christian in order to be part of these churches at that time. So those historical facts, those kind of facts show that the members of the Constitutional Convention, which were the most influential group of men shaping the political foundation of our nation, were almost all Christians. 51 out of 55. That's 93% of the founding fathers, okay? 93%. As a matter of fact, 70% of those people were Calvinists. That is, the Episcopalians, the Presbyterians, and the Dutch Reformed. They're all Calvinists. And of course, You know, the Calvinists are considered by most people, both today and that at that time, to be the most dogmatic kind of Christians. Even Benjamin Franklin, who everybody agrees was not the most religious person in the world, you know, he was raised in a Puritan family. He then abandoned that. He adopted deism for a while, but then he abandoned that. But it's on record, public record, that his public prayer was a turning point for a hopelessly stalled convention. And though far from being an Orthodox Christian, he gave an emotional call to humble prayer on June 28th, 1787. There was a deadlock in the Constitutional Convention, and it was broken by Franklin's prayer, all right? He said, quote, he says, "And have we forgotten that powerful friend," meaning God, "or do we imagine that we no longer need his assistance? I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall on the ground without his notice, is it possible that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel." Even Thomas Jefferson, who everybody says was an atheist or an agnostic or was hostile to Christianity, but even he did not advance a secular government. Okay, in his second inaugural address, he asked for prayers to Israel's God on his behalf. So though he wasn't a Christian in the strict New Testament sense, he certainly wasn't an Enlightenment deist or Masonic occultist or Illuminati puppet either. Jefferson was more of a Unitarian than either a deist or a Christian. You look at all these men's lives, and the point is, regarding their religious, personal religious convictions, if that's what you're focusing on, you're missing the point. The most important factor regarding the faith of the founding fathers is not whether or not they had a saving knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. The question whether or not America's heritage is secular or Christian is not determined by how many of the founders we can prove were Christians and ended up in heaven after they died. That question can only be resolved by determining the dominant convictions, the dominant outlook that the men who created this nation had, and whether or not those convictions and that outlook dictated their views of what kind of government and nation we should have. You can prove they're all non-Christians in hell. That doesn't matter. If they left us a government that was rooted in Christian ideals and Christian principles, that's all that matters. And as I said, some of the founding fathers may not have been Christians in the Orthodox sense, but in the broader sense, that is, in the sense that would affect and influence the culture of the new nation and the government of the new nation, their thinking was thoroughly Christian. Unlike many of today's Orthodox evangelical Christians who live like unbelievers, the founders of America had political ideas that were rooted in a Christian worldview. It's true they didn't always believe biblically, but most of them thought biblically in terms of biblical principles and ideas. And that resulted in a particular type of government that was never created on this planet before or since. And that's the kind of man Thomas Jefferson was. A legal historian named Gary Amos says this about Jefferson. He said, quote, "Jefferson is a notable example of how a man can be influenced by biblical ideas and Christian principles, even though he never confessed Jesus Christ as Lord in an evangelical sense." See, those who honestly study the documents of the revolutionary period, they're going to walk away with the exact opposite view that Mr. Pinto tries to present in his propaganda piece. After narrowing down the number of founders down to five men, then he goes on to try and prove that they were all following the humanistic philosophy of reason. See, but if Pinto is correct, if that's what they did, then the government they would have left us would have been very different from the one they actually left us. They rejected the traditional form of humanism at that time, with its assumption that men are basically good, that those who are highly educated have the natural right to rule over those who are less fortunate. And they also rejected the radical humanism that produced the French Revolution with all its mayhem and bloodshed, all right? America's founders had a biblical world view of mankind. They knew the human race was fallen and easily corrupted by power. And as a result, they refused to establish a monarchy or an oligarchy, which always ends up abusing the common man. But neither did they trust the common man. Okay, that's why they refused to establish a democracy, because they knew a democracy can easily devolve into a mob rule called mobocracy. They knew man was fallen, they knew it was easily corruptible, and they knew money and power would corrupt him. It was because of their biblical worldview, not their humanist worldview, not their Enlightenment view, regarding the moral and spiritual condition of mankind. That's why they constructed a representative republic with an ingenious set of checks and balances. So no one person or group of persons could come to power and be corrupted by that power.